Okay, begin in chapter 31 here. Make sure you're in fellowship. This next section, we see that Jacob leaves the premises. Jacob's left the house covertly, stealthily, sneaks off from Laban. And here in verses 1 through 3, we are given the reason why this occurs in such fashion. We're looking at here the Hebrew, verse 3, in the parsing, then the Lord said to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers and to your relatives, and I will be with you. Return, he had the wow consecutive, and he said, follow the cow, imperfect third masculine singular verb, amar, A-M-A-R. The one speaking here is Yahweh. Reveals himself to Jacob, speaks to him, the Lord, Y-A-H-W-E-H, to Jacob's preposition L, E-L, proper noun Jacob. Then our verb to return is cal imperative, masculine singular shuv, S-H-U-B, to is a preposition L, E-L, again repeated. Land is your common feminine singular construct, eretz, E-R-E-T-S, of your fathers. The common masculine plural noun construct with the second masculine singular suffix again, our noun of, A-B. And to your relatives, vowel conjunction, preposition lamed. Then our noun relatives or kin, as it might be, is a common feminine singular construct. The second masculine singular suffix in the noun moledeth, M-O-L-E-D-E-T-H. And I will be with you is the vowel conjunction. Cal imperfect first common singular, hayah, H-A-Y-A-H. To exist with is the idea. With you is a preposition M, with a second feminine singular suffix. Obviously, feminine looking at his soul, the nephesh, that this is what I've picked up throughout Genesis here. I am, second feminine singular suffix. All right, rereading the verses 1 through 3. Jacob heard the words of Laban's sons, saying, Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from that which belonged to our father, he has made all this wealth or glory. Verse 2, and Jacob saw the attitude of Laban, and behold, it was not friendly towards him as like formerly 3 days ago, or the day before yesterday. Verse 3, then the Lord said to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers and to your relatives, and I will be with you. All right. Now this is verses 1 through 3. Some 6+ years now have passed since Jacob began his business endeavor. So now we're at the end of this six-year period. You know this through our chronology timeline. 2, he has accumulated much wealth, as verse 43, ending chapter 30, so declared, as a result of success in the breeding of the sheep and goats, a fact previously assumed. In 43, the assumption is exceeding prosperity came as a result of his breeding practices. So 3, it is now validated that indeed is the purpose or the reason why. It is now validated by the remarks of Laban's sons, who were given charge to look after the flocks initially separated from the solid color herd. We saw his sons previously That was back in verses 35 and 36, where Laban called out the black sheep and variegated goats and put them into care of his sons, and they then oversaw that herd themselves some 3 days' journey from the main herd. So it's the same sons that are in view here. So far, now in the eyes of men, his success appears to be the result of exceptional skills on Jacob's part to bring about the desired genetics for his prophet. Again, as dealt with in our previous verses in chapter 30, he's the man, if you will, in the eyes of other men, in his success, and by the appearance, by just overt physical appearance, removing any spiritual realities, it appears to others around him that his exceptional wealth came about through exceptional skills on being able to breed sheep and goats. However, 5, the spiritual reality was that it was God that blessed the breeding. Human efforts aside, that becomes very clear in verses 7 and following here in our chapter 31, as God reveals that specifically to Jacob. Ultimately, Jacob recognizes it himself. God did not allow his Laban to hurt me, verse 7. Then he gives the details when Laban changed his wages, whatever he changed, that which Jacob could keep in wage, whether it's a striped goat, speckled goat, mottled. He did this some 10 times over the 6-year period, and the sheep would then reproduce with whatever he said that he could keep. And verse 9, God has taken away your father's livestock and given them to me. So then the dream that he has in correlation with that all points to the fact that God was the one that was manipulating the genetics truly, ultimately, in regards to the offspring out of Laban's herds. So, but in the eyes of men, generally speaking, don't give God credit. They want to give the man himself all the credit. And often the men themselves want to take all the credit. Obviously, you got the fundies that recognize this principle. You'll see them kneeling in after a touchdown, a ball game, or whatever. You know, doing the sign of the cross, that one always gets me. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's the cosmos. God helps those that help themselves mentality. Oh, really? It all depends on your capabilities. Oh, really? If that was the case, I wouldn't be a pastor. My capabilities of foreign languages, I took Spanish 2 years in high school. The best I could do is a C. The best. And even now, I can't remember hardly any of it, except for the good stuff, and I can't repeat that. So, we went through that, and through these verses that we'll go through now, I think you'll see that it makes sense in the approach that we've taken in regards to the whole ordeal with the striped rods scenario, and how we've interpreted why he's referred to as a man, and that is to differentiate cosmic viewpoint versus God's and doctrinal viewpoint in regards to the situation. So in the eyes of men, again, his success appears to be based on his exceptional skills of being able to breed these animals. But the reality was, point 5, it was God that blessed the breeding human efforts aside, even with best means of human efforts, best skills, things, if God's not in it, things go haywire. Ask the souls from the people from the Challenger space rocket. All that genius is poured into these projects from NASA and other, and where are they at? See. But that's not the way the world thinks. You know, in regards to God being involved on things, people don't like to think that way. Negative vision doesn't like to think that way. Because then it makes them reconsider their whole life. See? All these things that we think are so damn important in life. But if God's not involved in it, then it must not be that important. Six, we can safely assume now that Jacob practiced his, quote, striped rods, end quote, technique, which I'm calling the whole scenario, throughout this time, as his father-in-law, Laban, changed the rules of Jacob's commission some 10 times over the 6 years, and that, you figure, allowing for mating seasons approximately twice a year, the first year gone by, then all of a sudden Laban starts to get frustrating, and he starts, you know, reneging on the terms of the contract. His dishonesty, once again, takes center stage in regards to his character and his personality. This guy was a real shyster. A believer. You don't think believers can be this bad? You're blind to the world. You're blind to Bible doctrine if you really think that. And still be a believer. Yes, still be a believer. So, the fact that Laban changed the rules so many times at least strongly implies, but logically too, that he was continuing this practice throughout the 6 years. And we'll see some language that will kind of verify that a little bit later in our verses. In the actual changing of the terms verse in that regards. So 7, no matter the attempts to undermine Jacob's success, it always failed. No matter how much Laban tried to gig him, tried to trip him up, tried to make him fail. Got a boss like that? God overruled it. God interceded on behalf of Jacob. And every attempt to undo this trickery, as they would be visualizing it themselves, they would see it as mystic. And it always failed. So 8, it could easily appear to those that omit God from the equation here, only, quote, playing the odds, end quote, in life, that somehow Jacob is cheating the family. Now recognizing that God is in control of things and that it is all dependent upon men's efforts and capabilities and abilities as to why things happen in history, why things happen in life. In this situation, even though they were trying to trip him up every step that they could in regards to all this, and they couldn't, to them, you can see where they're thinking with all of a sudden, he's doing something underhanded here. He's cheating us. Because how can the odds end up going this direction when the norm is always these animals that Jacob gets is the minority, or the lesser percentage of reproduction. So 9, like father, like, quote, sons, end quote, Jacob's cousins also carry an air of distrust in others. the personalities we've seen, the personality traits of Laban runs through the family. His daughters, we've seen it. And now we see it in his sons. Because they're taking issue with this now. They're bitching and moaning and groaning about all this now. About his success. So 10 further, it's obvious they have not enjoyed any success to speak of with the original flocks put under their care. Again, filling in the blanks. They were put over in charge of the culled herds to begin with. They were variegated. The very line of genetics that Jacob has had so much success with in his life, even out of solid colored ones. And what have they done with their flock? If they were being that successful, they were making big time, they wouldn't be moaning and groaning like this probably. See? So you have these mitigating circumstances here that we can safely conclude was going on. That now ignites essentially the accusations they're throwing at Jacob now. And that's what's going on. So, Levin, these observations give insight to the intent of their words in verse 1. Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and for what belonged to our father, he has made all this well. So 12, jealousy obviously is involved, envy. It ignites their accusation, and distrust then underwrites their intent of their words. So 13, the first part of their statement, has taken away all that was our father's, is exaggeration. Lakak ko asher lamet ab. That is a balloon statement. Obviously, not all their assets are gone. All of Laban's assets are gone. But they say he's taken all of it. And you understand that they're trying to trump up a charge against here in regards to Jacob. So, 14, false accusation will often blow things out of proportion for cause. Oh, like we don't see that in the media today. Anything to make a story. Yeah. Blow it out of proportion. And the reality is God is the one that's done all this. All Jacob was doing was his work. Seeing to his business, to the best of his ability. And now they're moaning and groaning that he's taken away all of their father's assets. 15, obviously Jacob hasn't acquired Laban's entire estate. How else would he be able to go after him with all of his servants later on to chase him down? And he still has assets. We're dealing with people that are maladjusted and are trying to find cause because they're jealous, because they're envious, because they don't understand doctrine. They don't understand how God operates. So, taking away all that is their father's is exaggeration. This, obviously, in trying to trump up a charge here, make a false accusation, often things are blown out of proportion to make things seem worse than what they really are. 16, this betrays then the preconceived notion that somehow the family has been robbed. The verb has taken. The cock. He has taken. He took it all. See, like he ripped them off. He's ripping them off. That's the idea that comes from their first statement. And he's taken all of it. So 17, the only things Jacob has received in reality is what was agreed upon and allowed by Laban as revealed in his changing of terms. He only allowed, Laban had complete control. This guy's a control freak. He's not going to let anything slip underneath the rug that he thinks he's getting ripped off on. Come on, you got to recognize this guy. Realize the kind of operator he truly was. He changes his wages 10 times. No, he's got a thumb on everything. He's that guy that's always looking over your shoulder, see, to make sure you don't do anything he doesn't like. So that mitigates against their proclamation, against their accusation. Now the second part of their statement. From what belonged to our father, he has made all this wealth. Reflects the sons, Laban's sons, rationale behind their accusation. They're going to make a false accusation. They've got to rationalize it. That is, men Asher, Ab, Asa, Ko, Ha, Kavad, Hazeh. So 19, while the idea of Jacob's prophet stemming from what their father owned is true, its intent is distorted by being discolored by the first statement. How often people take and they manipulate the intent of words or intents of actions to put it in their own perspective. That's a tactic used by people that want to try to do things that are not always above board. So, he made his wealth from what Laban initially owned, according to agreement. But that whole statement has already been leavened or distorted based on the fact that they have made an accusation that he's robbing them. So 20, in other words, rather than accurately portraying the true idea of making the wealth because it's based on agreement and it was not anything that Laban gave Jacob up front to begin with, no loan, is simply sharing in the profits as his commission. That was the proposition that was agreed upon. So in other words, rather than actually portraying the true idea, it truncates it as if to say that Laban was simply a target being taken advantage of by Jacob through unfair play. Their dad was just a target. They took it from what dad has. Our dad was his target. He was planning on cheating him. See, that's the idea. So 21, the inclusion of truth that he did make profit from what Laban had to begin with, the inclusion of truth with the error of the distortion of falsehood gives their notion then validity. That's their rationalizing. It all belonged to Dad to begin with. So it should all stay with Dad. No, that's not the agreement. But this is what they're trying to argue, so to speak. So, 23, now, the New American Translation wealth here. Oh, 22, excuse me. 21 again. The inclusion of truth with the error of falsehood gives their notion validity. 22, the truth is that Jacob hasn't robbed anybody, even if his profit came from their father's assets initially. So 23, the New American Standard Translation, wealth is literally in the Hebrew glory or honor. That is intended then to depict or paint Jacob as crowing or gloating over success. like father, like sons, just like I said. You can see their dad all over the place, you know, in their words. So 24, their words attempt to paint Jacob as a thieving shyster, having taken advantage of their poor father and going around reveling in his success. They're going to paint him in the worst possible light they can because they're making an accusation. See? And now we see the procedure, how they did it. So learn from this and you can try it on somebody. I'm just kidding. If you want to end up broke later on in your life, I guess that you can, but whatever. All right, 25. Now, why Jacob's cousins intercede at this point is unknown. It's not stated. Why now, at the end of these 6 years? 26, a couple of possibilities. They're just food for thought, basically. Maybe they felt like their father was a type that would keep on until he really lost everything and felt it necessary to intervene. I just looked at it as learning what Laban, his type of character. He's changed it, the wages 10 times. God's blessing Jacob, hand over fist, but he's so greedy, so monetary. He's like an addict, like a gambling addict almost. He's just going to hang in there with it. And the sons go, man, he's going to wipe us out if he doesn't stop. See? So that's a possibility. That's plausible. At least I think it is. And in addition to that, in 27, fear of losing their potential inheritance could have been a driving force, a big one. They're seeing all this wealth go to their cousin rather than in their own coffers, in their own pockets. And obviously, if they practice the monetary trend like their father, that'd drive them nuts. We got to do something. Dad's going to break us. We're going to lose it all. And we are losing it all in their eyes. So 28, no matter their reasoning in that regards, jealousy or envy again rears its ugly head in this family. Just as we saw in regards to the sisters, parents tend to pass on their trends or cultivate their trends, if you will. The STA is passed on by the father. But both parents can cultivate the STA in the familiar setting to the kids by not overruling their own STA. And jealousy, envy, obviously personifies Laban in part. And we saw it in regards to Rachel and Leah, where Leah started having kids and Rachel didn't have any. She became jealous of her sister. And she throws her fit. Give me children or else I die. We'll talk about that in a few years. So 29, they demonstrate their father's preoccupation with money and the details of life. So 30, now the cousins, Laban's sons, weren't shy about voicing their grievances as Jacob either overheard or was told by others of their slander. And that's what it is, a slander. They take something that just basically strictly judged by appearance in regards to their any grounds to make this accusation. There's no real fact involved. So it's important that we have a correct read on their words and where they're coming from to now make sense then of the next verse of Laban's change of attitude in verse 2 to answer the missing link in the Hebrew, not in the English, of those 3 days or the day before yesterday. So 31, the words of Laban's sons didn't give depth to the meaning in verse 32. And Jacob saw the attitude of Laban And behold, it was not friendly toward him as formerly. While Jacob, Ra'apaneh, Laban, Wahina, Ain, Im, Kaf, Tamo, Shilashon, or adverb, Shilashon. Okay, first of all, 32, the interjectory particle, behold, implies that Laban's change of attitude was sudden and unexpected. When the interjector, this particle is used in fashion, it brings attention to something suddenly. Behold, look, you know. So that conveys the idea that his change of attitude didn't happen over a long period of time. It was fairly sudden, and it was unexpected on top of it. 33, further, the New American Standard omits the Hebrew adverb shilashom, that literally means 3 days ago or the day before yesterday, as we explained it with, in Hebrew time, as they would count the present day as one day. Yesterday is the second day, the day before is the third day. So 34, a literal Hebrew translation of the final phrase, attending Laban's change of attitude, could be rendered, quote, and behold, it was not with him like formerly 3 days before or the day before yesterday. So 35, the Hebrew is fairly clear that Laban's disparaging attitude was not something that built up over time, but occurred shortly after his cousin started mouthing off in accusation. So while that points to his cousins riling up the old man in regards to their thoughts and accusations towards Jacob. So 36, Jacob's cousins are the instigators in this case of Laban's sudden change in demeanor towards Jacob by bending his ear with the poison of their allegations. How easy it is to light a fire, especially in someone in Laban's position and with his STA trends on top of it all, that he's losing everything, and all of a sudden you have the majority around him saying, you're being cheated. Your nephew's robbing you, Dad. He's doing something unhanded. We can't put our finger on it. You know, whatever they want to throw in here. And now you can see why, behold, all of a sudden Laban's attitude changed from friendly to a scowl, a real distrust now. No telling what he might be scheming. We can ask him phase three at this point in time in his history. We know that he didn't just blow it off. Otherwise, why did God intervene and personally speak to him and say, hey, you touched Jacob's one hair in his head and you're dead meat, dude? Paraphrasing. It's in the Hebrew. No, I'm just kidding. That's later on. So, understanding that Laban's sons are doing this trumped up accusation. They go in, they bend their old man's ear, and they convince him, if you will, that he's being robbed, he's being cheated by his nephew. And that gives then reason, or that gives substance to the fact that his attitude changed immediately. Up to that point in time, he was still doing all right, more or less, towards Jacob. He didn't have any ill feelings to speak of, no matter what he may have been feeling about his losses. So 37, now, while Jacob has become very wealthy, he does not have the kind of family support, a defense, a military defense, if you will, to truly protect him if violence was supposed to break out over the affair. if this thing would, the balloon, ignite, fire up the balloon, where hostilities then started coming from Laban and the family, Jacob would have been hard-pressed with any defense that he might have had otherwise. Of course, Jacob kind of runs under fear like his father and grandfather before him a little bit anyway. But it is a legitimate concern. I mean, obviously, you got a whole gang come down the street and there's only one of you. You're not going to sit there and say, oh, I'll take them all on. You're going to try to find a way out of there. Even though you do still trust God. You trust God that gives you really fast feet. See? So this puts Jacob in a precarious situation in regards to the well-being of his family, himself and his family, and all his assets that he has now God has blessed him with over these years. So 38, it's against this background then, understanding that Yahweh speaks to him, telling him, return to the land of your fathers and to your relatives, and I will be with you. Shub el eretz av wal lamed molodeth wal hayahim. So 39, in chapter 28, verse 15, God told Jacob in a dream that during his time away from his homeland, he would be with him and ensure a safe return home. In that dream, behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go and will bring you back to this land. Recognizing he's on his way out to Haran, Padan Aram, for I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. So, God reveals himself to Jacob. We'll learn later on is in a dream vision, dream state. Speaking to him with the crux of the dream, telling him to leave, go back home, and that he'll still be with him. And God obviously is keeping his end of the bargain. So 40, God proved to be good to his promise of the first part of being with him, blessing Jacob obviously with wise children and much wealth. 41, he now shows his hand to secure the promise of the second part by interceding on this occasion, telling Jacob to leave before any harm could befall him. And again, when we get into the next section, you know, you got those interpreters out there and commentaries that the method of the way Jacob left, because it's used in terms of deceit over Laban, that somehow Jacob was sinning in that occasion too. No, he wasn't. He was using some pretty good common sense, if you ask me, to get the hell out of Dodge before they had opportunity. And you can see why. The posture of his uncle Laban has turned against him. And he knows that his sons are behind him. It's a hanging at the OK Corral, man, or a shooting, whatever you want to call it. It's a shooting at the OK Corral. But God is with him. God has not abandoned him. And here he gives him a heads up. Gives him a heads up. Obviously, Jacob had no contractual ties to his uncle. His only contract was, I'm working for you, seeing overseeing your herds as I get the offspring, the percentage offspring of the variegated solid colored or black colored sheep and goats. He is free to leave anytime he wanted to. He didn't have to say goodbye. You don't have to say goodbye. I mean, if you don't want to. You know, if you're not under no obligation. So, again, I like to look at these things and running through, filtering through the doctrine of my soul, and put aside that which there is real no evidence of documentation otherwise. 42, that God's directed will is for him to leave takes precedence over the manner of his departure. That's the issue. God doesn't say you can't sneak out. He doesn't say you got to ride a camel out. He just says leave. So what's the obligation, what's the responsibility of the believer? To leave. How they may do it, obviously not embracing sin in the action, but how they may do it, the method they may do it, is up to them. That's one of the things we got to realize and recognize among believers, that it's not always basic, just because of custom or opinion, that something that someone does in the way that they do it may be necessarily wrong or a sin. If it's not documented in the Scripture that it is a sin, then who are you to make it a sin? See? It's pretty good defense when people make accusations at you. It cuts down to the quick to try to resolve the issue. Well, what's my sin? What did I do? Because they did not necessarily like a way that maybe you handled something. Well, what's my sin? And if they can't come up with an answer to that, usually it squelches their argument. Of course, the one time I tried, well, you did this. No, I'm just kidding. So 43a, Jacob was under no legal bind, and being innocent of the trumped-up charges, free to leave it at his whim. Whenever he felt like it, however he thought was appropriate in his situation and on behalf of his family. Father, again, we thank you for the truth of your word. We ask God the Holy Spirit to utilize these things in Jesus' name. Amen.